You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 269. 69. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you out of my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show from basements across the great nation of America, I assume. Not that I don't assume that you're great and everything. Don't hurt me. I just don't. I assume you're in basements.
I'm in my back family room, actually.
Oh, fuck. Okay, Mr. Tom Trauma.
I know somebody named Tom Trauma shouldn't have like a back family room. I know, but nevertheless, that's where I am.
I know that's not very trauma-y.
I'm a fraud. You exposed me, Adam. Thank you.
Upper dungeon.
Yes.
How are you, Tom?
I'm good, Adam. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
That's good.
Also on tonight's show, Mr. John Gentile out of Philadelphia.
Well, even though you insult our country, Adam, I will take the high road and say I like Canada just fine. So that's the kind of people we are. That's the kind of people Americans are. We take the high road. We have respect for everybody.
That's what we're known for internationally, right?
Haters gonna hate. Haters gonna hate. What can I say? I love Canada. I don't know why they don't like us, but I like Canada just fine.
Then why didn't you have the good respect to just be in a basement so you wouldn't fuck up my intro?
Well, Tom's in a basement. You don't know if I'm in a basement or not. You don't know.
Do you live in one of those cities where like you can't have basements because like you're built on like a sandy bank?
No, I actually have a basement, but I'm not in it right now.
Oh,
I have one too, but I'm also not in it. I do have a basement, but it's built on an Indian cemetery.
Is it really?
Well, no. Your whole country is sort of built on an Indian cemetery.
Yeah, the whole country's an Indian cemetery.
So if you hear any strange voices.
Hey, something beeped. Professionalism. All right. Hi. Welcome to the Punkies Podcast. I don't think we have any mail this week, so we're just going to kind of get started, and we're going to talk about some punk rock. We're going to talk about things that have been happening in the past week over on punknews.org. If you have not been to punknews.org in the last couple of weeks, it's undergone a pretty significant redesign, and we're fixing all the little problems kind of day on day and changing things up and trying to make it better and try to, get what we envision to be what actually is what people are using. So we're getting there. So if you visited Punk News like a couple weeks ago, you should go there again because we keep tweaking stuff. If anyone wants to email us about what's going on in tonight's show, the email address for this show is podcast@punknews.org. That is the best way. We love reading your mail. We didn't have any this week. No one emailed us about the Pope. I was a little bit disappointed, but hey.
The Pope was cool, man. Yeah. I liked him. I thought he was all right.
Yeah, he was good. I mean, he was a paizan, right?
Like he was a paizan. You know, we paizan, men's amends. You know.
Yeah. So okay, we're gonna talk about a bunch of things then that are happening. First of all, we're gonna talk about a bunch of releases. This is the season where all of the cool stuff in the fall is starting to stream, and you can go check out most of it by paying very little money at this stage. So, you know, go out there and get your sample on and check these things out. So I'm going to mention three. There might be more. But as we talked about on last week's show, the new album from Nightbirds on Fat Records called Mutiny at Muscle Beach, that one is now streaming. That record actually came out this past week, I believe. No, last week on Friday. All the releases are on Friday now. New World on October 2nd. So Mutiny at Muscle Beach, you can go buy it. If for some stupid reason you don't want to go buy it, you can go stream it and that will convince you to go buy it. So we got that one going on. We have the album that I keep talking about on this show, the album Soar by Dilly Dally, the debut LP from that Toronto fuzzy grungy punk band. That record is now streaming. The stream's over at Exclaim. We'll include the link in the show notes. That one comes out this week on Friday on Partisan Records in the US and Buzz Records in Canada. So that one's coming out. And there is a stream of the self-titled EP from Bad Canoes that is also online. So all of these things are out there, and you should check them out because a lot of it's really good. John, you want to tell people about some of this stuff? You want to talk about the Bad Canoes? You love this band.
I love the Bad Canoes. They put out a cassette EP last year. This is a new EP they're putting out. In case you don't know, Bad Canoes is four young women. It's Marissa Paternoster of Screaming Females, Dawn Riddle, Kate Ills, and Christina Centaur. And they do, I call it Slits Meet Screamers punk rock. Their music is flits between very very beat-oriented, very poppy, and extremely cacophonic. Cacophonic? Euphonist?
Cacophonic?
Cacophonic.
Let's say cacophonic.
And I'll tell you, the new EP is everything that I hoped it would be. I love this band. They've got one song called Ben FM, which to me, it's like kind of what the core punk rock song is all about. It's about this radio station, Ben FM, but I'm not even sure like what the song is actually supposed to be about. There's another song called Jazz History, and it's about how they want to have sex with Moses. But then somehow that like segues into how much they hate guys that like just obsessively talk about jazz. And I don't understand the relation, but this is what I want punk rock to be. It's extremely unique, extremely aggressive, extremely weird, but very punchy and very aggressive. And I love it. However, speaking of things that's maybe perhaps more traditional, fellas, how about Nightbirds, fellas? Nightbirds. Tom Trauma, Nightbirds?
Well, the amazing thing about Nightbirds, I love this band. I it reminds me of everything that was good about like 80s punk. I mean, I hear like TSOL, Dead Kennedys, you know, I love this band. But the amazing thing about Nightbirds is everybody seems to love them.
Because they rule,
people,
man.
People half my age love them. People, you know, my grandma probably loves them. I mean, very rarely do you see a band that is so mutual, you know, loved by everybody, and they're not wimpy, you know? They're not the Menzingers. They're like a punk rock band. And I just love the fact that everybody loves them. I've kind of been lamenting the fact this year that there hasn't been a lot of like great punk rock records. True, most of my favorite records this year so far have been metal, and I love it. It's a nice little treat here at the end of the year.
Yeah, Brian Gorsinger, when he was on the podcast last, I say his name wrong. It's not Brian Gorsinger. It's Brian Gorsegner, I think. He's the vocalist for Nightbirds. He basically said it's the Rocky III moment where basically everything comes together and everything it's been building towards this. And I would definitely say this is definitely a quote third record. It's everything that's great about the first two records refined and pumped up by four. It's basically, it's not a radical change for them, but it's tight, compact, and it's everything they do the best way that they can do it. Adam White, agree?
I agree. This is a fun record. It is brisk. You can listen to this thing like four times a day, and you know every time it's over, you're like, "What? That's all? Let's have some more." So, you know, which is what I love about punk rock records like this. I want them short and sweet, and you know, infinitely repeatable, and that's absolutely what this is. Yeah, if you liked Born to Die in Suburbia, you'll absolutely like this. I feel like this is to me almost a degree faster, I think, than Born to Die. At least it feels that way to me.
Yeah, it feels that way.
It's either that or it's a little bit more. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is here.
Bombastic, explosive, jacked up.
It is jacked up might be the thing. I mean, like Born to Die in Suburbia wasn't a slow record or anything like that. But
you know, the thing with this that I'm most pleased about, when I see they're going to Fat, you know, their first two records are on Grave Mistake, a great little label. I'm like, I was hoping that the Fat like quality of production wouldn't kind of suck the life out of them. It absolutely didn't. It's still raw as hell. That's what I like about it.
That's a good point. You know, like I'm not actually like the Fat. I used to hate the Fat sound, but now I actually kind of like it for some records like Bad Cop, and that kind of stuff. Why do you think that this record, and pretty much solely this record of the past few years, did not adopt that Fat sound? Do you think Fat Mike just said, do whatever you want, fellas? Or do you think Fat Mike said, the Fat sound won't work for this one? Or, actually, I'm just throwing this out there. Maybe they did not apply the Fat sound because most Fat bands are West Coast bands and Nightbirds are East Coast, so they figured different sound is required. That could be it.
I don't know if there is necessarily a... Like, I don't know if the Fat sound is necessarily something that's calculated like that. I think that it's more a case of, like, you have bands that are the bands that exhibit that sound, right? They're brought up in that scene. They have aspects that, you know, given a little bit more production, are definitely going to come forward. And then because they're working with Fat, they get to work with, you know, the people that, you know, produce and mix a lot of the other Fat bands. So just like by virtue of those connections, they can go and they can, you know, hook up with those people. And I think that just sort of comes out of it. But like, if you look at a lot of records that have showed up on Fat over the past few years, I don't think they've necessarily went and adopted a Fat sound. I mean, you know, hell, like the Sick of It All records that were on Fat were, you know, maybe a shade more poppy in some ways than some of the other Sick of It All records, but they didn't, you know, they didn't sound like Lagwagon. So,
Adam, I mean, you've been beating on this Dilly Dally drum. This band is cool. I've seen some of their videos. The Dilly Dally album, is it hype, Adam? Is it hype?
I'm super stoked with this. I've listened to this a total of once because I didn't even realize that the stream was out, so I'd kind of gone through it today. It has, you know, it has the songs that I've just been like, you know, playing on repeat for the past little while, which are songs like Purple Rage and Desire, which are written these very kind of like Pixies and Breeders-ish kind of, you know, 90s grungy punk numbers that they had out there. There's also a few songs on here that came from the various digital EPs and whatnot that they had put out before. Or at least versions of them. There's a version of a Green, which was on a Fat Possum 7-inch that they had out. There's a version of a song called, I am totally blanking on it. That is the other one. That was a stupid point to make. I could just look. Oh, God. Next Gold, which was another digital single that they've had online for a long time. So, like, a bunch of these things have all kind of come together into a nice little package, which I've never heard from this band before because of their first full length. They have never released anything that's had more than two songs on it before. So, you know, being able to see how they actually play with a whole album worth of, you know, material and to actually figure out like how they sequence that, which songs they choose to include. So it's not all kind of samey is really neat. So yeah, this is good. I'm going to be listening to this a lot. It's going to rank quite highly come end of year for me. And, I've just gotten started listening to this thing. So yeah, I'm super stoked. I'm super happy with this.
Listen, people, check out the new Nightbridge Rat album. It is a ripper. If you want something weird, if you want something aggressive, if you want something far out, check out both Bad Canoes and Dilly Dally. They don't sound like each other, but they're both definitely punk. They're both definitely weird, and they're both definitely, you know, psyched out. It's good stuff. Let's talk about some stuff that's not good stuff, man. Pandora. You know, the gigantic online company Pandora has purchased Ticketfly for a cool $450 million. In case you don't know, until really about 5 years ago, if you bought a ticket online or even at most places, you had to pay the dreaded devil Ticketmaster. Here's an example. I saw the Henry Rollins Keith Morris tour. It was $18. Do you guys know how much I paid to Ticketmaster?
$12.
$12 on an $18 ticket. That's Ticketmaster for you. And somehow Congress decided that it wasn't a monopoly, which all Ticketmaster does is print out a stupid ticket for $12. Ridiculous. There's like three main companies. There's Ticketfly.
It's a convenience charge, John. It's convenient for them to take your money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, real convenient. And then when they did get busted by a class action, they had to give me a $2.50 credit. I mean –
and then you could use that to buy another ticket where you get ripped off again.
And they raised the prices. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was so ridiculous. Going back, in case you guys didn't know, Ticketmaster got hit with a class action lawsuit because they were charging a, quote, processing fee for like $4 a ticket. And it didn't even associate to anything. It was just an extra $4 they just charged you on top of all their other fees. So they got caught. So they had to refund everybody $2.50. But you could only apply it to another Ticketmaster ticket, and they raised their prices. It was bull honky. Anyways, so there was, you know, in the past five years or so, three pretty cool companies have come up. Ticketweb, Ticketfly, Brown Paper Tickets. We're talking $3 a ticket surcharge on a $15 ticket. Reasonable. I would say that's reasonable. Tom Trauma, reasonable, $3 on 15.
Absolutely.
Adam White, $3.15. That's reasonable, right?
Sure.
That's Ticketfly. Well, it looks like Pandora just bought them out. And they basically said that they are interested in actually in their press release. Let me read the press release. I got it online. So the question that everyone has is Ticketfly was one of the companies that was battling against Ticketmaster and had a much more – we're talking about one-fifth the price. Is that era over? But oh, here we go. Let me read the press release. This is from them automatically. Ticketfly joining forces with Pandora to transform the live events experience. And by transform the live events experience, I think they mean transform by charging me $10 more a show is how they're going to transform it. I mean, I understand how business works. I just hope Ticketfly doesn't become the devil that it's been battling against for the past 5 years. And I hope Ticketweb and Brown Paper Tickets stay strong. Honestly, I hope the punk kids – I actually figured out a way that punk shows can sell tickets with no service charge, actually. But anyways, what do you guys think of this? What do you guys think of this?
I'm kind of – I just drove
downtown today. We have this thing in Grand Rapids called the Art Prize, and it's this huge cluster of humanity walking on our streets. And I went down there today to save like $5 a ticket because I just go – generally, if I can, I just go right to the venues and buy the tickets. But that can be a bit of a pain in the ass too. But I don't know what's going to happen with this. Most of our venues here use Ticketweb, so it won't really affect us. But
Ticketweb's nice, man. I like Ticketweb.
Yeah, but I Ticketmaster,
I want to say that like Ticketmaster hate is pretty universal at this point. I've never used Ticketweb and I've never used Brown Paper Tickets. And I'm just trying to like pull some info here from the various things in the internet that talk about these things. But Ticketweb at one point had one of the Ticketfly CEO guys involved in it. So it at some point was linked up there. Brown Paper doesn't seem to be. But if you look at the whole Ticketfly Pandora thing, it's sort of funny that some of the commentary that I've seen from people is talking about they're like, oh, the formerly nice ticket company is now going to get like snatched up by big business or whatever. And what's that going to do? I mean, maybe, but let's, put that into a little bit of perspective about like, how much money these companies were playing with in the first place. So I just went and pulled up both of these. So Pandora, we can all agree, at least in online music for a number of years has been one of the big players, one of the early big players, I guess. Not available in Canada. So I don't know anything fucking about it at all, but hey, but if you look at Pandora, they are running on about $56 million worth of venture capital funding since 2000. And then you look at Ticketfly, but before they were bought out or anything like that, Ticketfly has $87 million of venture capital funding in it. So whatever these businesses were doing, there was definitely like – tens of millions of dollars floating around to make them happen, to help support, the pricing that they're offering, to help maybe, I wonder, looking at like Ticketfly, how much of their lack of fees had to do with the fact that they could just like burn through millions of dollars of venture capital money. There's just something about it that like, I don't know, doesn't feel super virtuous to me. Like Ticketmaster's evil, don't get me wrong, but I don't think any of these companies are necessarily like these aren't. This isn't Discord Records here. So
true, but then how come Ticketfly is only charging $3 and Ticketmaster is charging $15 to $40 or more?
Oh well, I'm sure that like they're charging less specifically because they want the marketplace to see that as being the differentiation between them and Ticketmaster. They want everyone to have that reputation as being the people with sensible service fees. So I mean that's what they're doing. I'm just wondering, How much of what they're doing is actually, how much of those $3 fees were actually paying for that company to exist, and how much of the low fees were just being subsidized by the $87 million of funding that they had?
So you think this is – I forget the name. Is it the kind of company that is formed specifically to be bought out? You think that's what this was?
I think that – I mean this is me being cynical, but I think most of these tech companies that are doing anything these days – have that at least somewhere in the back of their mind where like they might very well believe in what they're doing, but when push comes to shove, hey, if someone wants to come give us a shit ton of money, pay off all of our investors and let us all go live on boats, then that's really what we want.
Sign me up for that.
Well, right, let's make the Adam, John, and Tom ticket company. We'll charge a reasonable fee.
You know, I only used Brown Paper Tickets one time, guys, and I swear I think the tickets were $15, and I swear the charge for both tickets was like $2 something. I'm like, how the hell? They can't even barely afford to send them to me. for what the, you know, for what the fee was.
Brown paper tickets is ridiculous. And actually, Adam, isn't it funny how the scenario you described, which is a real scenario, is really just a legal pyramid scheme that you hope cashes out before it collapses? I mean, that's what you've described.
The entire tech world, and I say this as being someone that works in tech, is so fucked up. And it feels like there's definitely there's a whole class of people that I think kind of like do what I do that are basically the you know, computer industry or the IT industry equivalent of like auto workers or coal miners or something like that, which is like we go out there and we write code and we develop, but you know, no one's giving us, you know, bags of money, and no one really gives a shit. We just go do our work. Then there's the whole startup culture aspect of it. The people that are, you know, reading TechCrunch and trying to get, you know, I don't know, Y Combinator money and all this venture capital bullshit. And like all those guys, I mean, yeah, that, you know, that's in pyramid scheme land. I mean, pyramid scheme land is making a lot of crazy products that, you know, everyone really loves. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that's why you have your Ubers or your Twitters or whatever else. But, you know, push comes to shove, I don't know who's paying the bill on any of that.
Well, stuff. That's like Pandora. Does Pandora really make that much money? I mean, have they really figured out that good of a business model for that, for streaming yet, that they're making so much money that they can afford to buy other companies? It's
Well, again, I mean, when you have millions and millions of dollars of venture money, I imagine that you can buy all sorts of companies.
You can buy another company that makes no money, and you can combine to make one big company that makes no money.
Looking at, I mean, and this is not necessarily this isn't necessarily true, but like I'm looking at like Ticketfly, and I'm looking at a website called Crunchbase right now, which is like a thing that TechCrunch runs that you can look up companies in, and it's not necessarily accurate. It's just kind of like, you know, it's the best information people can accrue. They say Ticketfly is maybe they're in the category of being like 100 to 200 employees. So okay, that, you know, I could see you needing money for all those people's salaries. Pandora is, for whatever reason, listed in like the 1 to 10 employees category.
I think that might be accurate though. I think Pandora is like bizarrely like a small company.
Well, what do you do with all that money in that case? Like, I guess you're just buying rights.
I can think of stuff to do with that money, Adam.
Pretty nice employee lounge for those 10 employees. Fully stocked.
We always joke about the Punk News hovercraft, but these people may have it.
That can't be right, Adam, because they have 1,300 employees.
1,300?
Yeah, that's a little bit more.
That's more. But anyways, I don't care. That's a lot of money to be floating around. That is just money that someone loaned you as an investment. I trust none of it.
Well, what can we make and sell? Cassettes? Do people want cassettes? Can we sell that somehow?
We did, John.
Yeah, I made tons of cash on that one, let me tell you.
Yeah. Oh, John, I think you should just keep working down at the law mill and don't worry too much about, you know, making money on this internet thing.
You got to get on the class action lawsuits, John. That's where all the money's at, man.
That is where all the money's at. I mean, that really is where all the money's
Find a drug that badly damages someone and start running ads on television.
I can just represent Ticketmaster, you know, and say, here's $250 on a credit. Give me $40 million, you know.
So speaking of a drug that badly damages someone, the Lawrence Arms are headed out to play some shows in December in Chicago. The themes that they have of their tour here are going to be despair, revelry, and friendship, according to Red Scare. So what they're doing is they have asked the Methadones, Red City Radio, to off with their heads to join them and play these set of holiday shows. The shows are going to happen on December 10th, 11th, and 12th at the Double Door. The 10th show is the Sadness and Despair show. So this is going to be Lawrence Arms, Off With Their Heads, and Rapids. The 11th show is the Drinking and Revelry show. This one is going to feature Red City Radio, Lawrence Arms, and Turnspit. And the 12th show is the Love and Triumph show, which will feature the Lawrence Arms, the Methadones, and the Lippies. So you can find all those dates and everything on Punk News.
Can I interject here real quick, Adam? The Lippies are from here in Grand Rapids, and I've been beating the drum for them for a while, kind of quietly. But they're a female-fronted, kind of poppy, kind of straight punky band. But they're really good. I think we're going to be hearing a lot from them coming up. But yes, the Lippies. So if you're in Chicago, be sure to show up to the show on time.
Should we play a song by the Lippies?
Let's do it.
I don't actually have them prepared, so I don't know what I'm announcing.
I have their debut EP. Let's do. I'm gonna look real quick. I'm gonna look and see which. He caught me off guard. I was going to play another band from Detroit, but, you know, I guess.
No, you can play that band later. Let's play the Lippies now.
The Lippies. Let's do. This is kind of one of the. Let's do one of the kind of angry feminist songs. It's called Sidewalk Talk. And this is from their EP that came out at the end of last year. And this is the Lippies from Grand Rapids. Sidewalk Talk. Check it out. It's good stuff.
Was Sidewalk Talk by the Lippies, and that is how you do an impromptu seg into something you didn't plan. So there you go.
That's how Tom, we roll. Chaos.
Yeah. Guys, let's talk about Asbury Lanes here. Tom, you want to read this story for us?
Oh, dang it. Yes, I want to.
Are you physically able to?
Yes, I'm getting there. This story kind of makes me nervous. I'm going to Let's see where the heck. Oh, there we go. Crap. I can't, Adam. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I clicked on it and it won't work on my device. I don't have the list up on the.
And that's how you do an impromptu segue into an article.
God damn it. All right. So the landmark punk venue, Asbury Lane, has closed down for the time being. On October 3rd, 2015, the venue had its last show before undergoing heavy renovations, expected to last well into next year. The building itself will undergo interior and exterior renovations. This is because the building behind it will be repurposed into a 110-room hotel by the new owners of the whole area, which is a company called iStar. Now, iStar has spent $105 million over the past few years purchasing old bowling alleys. So the reason for the October 3rd shutdown is because the lease for the current operators has expired at the end of September. One of the guys from iStar, their senior vice president, a guy by the name of Brian, he has stated, we've committed to keeping it open. We've committed to keeping it an iconic music venue. You can find kind of the whole story linked over on Punk News. Now, Asbury Lanes, guys. This is a New Jersey institution. This is a place I have never been, so I'm going to shut up and let you talk about it because I suspect at least one of you has been there.
Yeah, I've never been there either. I'm going to assume that John is our man for this one.
Yeah, I've been there multiple times. In fact, I thought Asbury Lanes was actually older than it was as a music. They've only been doing music at Asbury Lanes since 2003. I thought it went back to like the 80s. But in case you've never been there, Asbury Park is famous because Bruce Springsteen sang a bunch of songs about Asbury Park. And he's got a song called Welcome to Asbury Park. And Asbury Park is a central/North Jersey beach. And honestly, Asbury Park is not what Bruce Springsteen has described it as in his album. And it hasn't been since the 50s. But Asbury Park has gone through a lot of different waves. You know, I don't want to draw this out, but, you know, in the 50s, it was kind of like this idyllic, like, place where people went and, like, got milkshakes and, like, made out with cute girls and stuff. And then in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, Asbury Park, and even the 90s, Asbury Park suffered severe economic problems and became a very poor area, very high crime rate area, an area with a lot of abandoned buildings. So a place with a lot of strife. Within the past 5 to 10 years, there's been a lot of economic development in it because people somehow just apparently realized in the past 10 years you can make money with beachfront property, which I never realized that. Wow. So Asbury Park, Asbury Lane, it's pretty cool. It's actually right off the ocean. It's a bowling alley, and they have punk rock concerts there. And actually, you can even bowl at some shows while there's concerts there. It's a neat venue in that, you know, it's a bowling alley and there's music there and stuff. I don't know if it's a great venue. Like, the sound isn't that great. And honestly, Asbury Park is in the middle of nowhere. Like, it takes forever to get to Asbury Park. It takes forever. You got to take, like, all these tiny, small roads to finally get there. It's way out of the way. And honestly, no one would even care about Asbury Park unless Bruce Springsteen mentioned it. That being said, Asbury Lanes, it's sad to see it shut down because – A, it was a great place for music. It was a place where a lot of like-minded people came to enjoy, you know, I guess what you call alternative music. And it was a place where out there music, daring music, could function outside of the deadly grasp of Live Nation and Ticketmaster and all those demons, you know. So it's certainly sad to close it down. I don't think it's going to open back up as like it was, and I'd be surprised if it opened up back at all. What annoys me most is when these CEO guys buy stuff. Like, their statements are so generic and such bullshit. Like, I'm insulted. They think I would believe what they're saying. We're committed to keeping it an iconic music venue. Like, that doesn't mean anything. Like, he's saying that to try to assuage me of my worries that my favorite venue – well, not my favorite venue, but a cool venue will be taken away. And I know he's taking it away. Like, he's so dumb. He thinks I'm so dumb, I'll just believe this viper at his word. You know what I mean? Like, I'm insulted by it. I'd rather he just say, we don't know what we're going to do with it. Like, what an asshole, you know. Anyways, I've been calling a lot of people jerks and assholes lately. I should stop doing that.
They'll use some of the original bowling alley lanes to, like, build one of the walls of the Whole Foods they put up, you know.
So I've got two questions here. I don't know what this says about music. The music industry itself is, you know, more and more we see more small clubs close down. CBGB's closed down. Asbury Lane's closing down. ABC No Rio, I think, is having problems, I think. I'm not sure about that. Maybe they closed down already, ABC No Rio? I forget. Oh, no. I'm going to lose punk points for that one. A lot of these smaller punk down in San Jose, the famous I love that club, but now it's gone. Voodoo Lounge is closed in San Jose, too. Is it the Metro? No. Anyways, a lot of these small clubs are closing down. I mean, is that just because there's too much music clubs, or is it because no one wants to spend any money? It's because the punk rock kids won't spend more than $8 a show, even though it's not 1984 anymore. Second question. For every music venue that shuts down, 3 more grow back in its place, like a hydra. So does a music venue location even really matter whatsoever? Or does it just matter that there is a place that there will be music? You know, or at least that there is a place that there will be music that's not controlled by Live Nation. Does the physical location really matter at all? Or is it, not to be too mushy, but is it the people that make a venue, not the venue itself?
I think that, like, the people can make a venue out of anywhere. I mean, that said, I appreciate being somewhere that I know has been open for a long time and has some history and has some great bands come through it. I think the real story here is that, you know, I would bet that most of these places have closed down not necessarily because music is live music is not super profitable, and it's not super profitable, but I think it's just that because, you know, real estate is much more profitable, and a lot of these places are falling because, you know, if especially if they're older live music venues, they're in city centers, they're in, you know, urban areas that are probably developing. And I mean, the funny thing is that like a lot of these places that are going to close down are in urban centers that are highly desirable for people to live in, partly because they have an art scene. So, you know,
well, and the property's cheap. You know, CBGB's closed down because the neighborhood got better.
True.
It was a great venue for a horrible, you know, rancid neighborhood. But, you know, same thing with Asbury. Like you talk about, they're going to put in condos and they're going to put in Whole Foods and they're going to, you know, and this little venue is not as, it's not a good use of square footage, John.
Well, you're right. You're right. It just doesn't pull in the same amount of money that a Whole Foods would or whatever, you know. So it's sad. The place did have character. It was in the middle of nowhere, which was a pain in the ass, but it was a cool landmark. And, well, what can I say, you know?
We'll have to eat our words if they open it back up next year and say, we told you we were going to shut it down.
Yeah, well, I will eat my words if it opens back up like it was. I don't foresee that happening, you know. So listen, let's talk about something that's – actually, let's talk about something that's equally as challenging. You know, I talk about The Garden a lot. This is probably the last time I talk about The Garden for a little while on the Punk News podcast. Their new album will be out by the time you hear this. It came out on Friday by the time you hear this. They've released a new song called Vexation and a video. And I want to Adam and Tom and listener, I'm going to play the song Vexation, and I want you guys to listen to it, and then we're going to talk about it. So this is Vexation by The Garden, out now on Epitaph Records. Their album is called Ha Ha. This is Vexation. Okay, that was Vexation. First of all, I love this track. I love how sinister it is. I love how brutal it is. I love how sparse it is, how cold it is, but how like explosive it is. It's tearing itself apart at the seams. First, straight up, first off, Adam and Tom, did you dig this tune? And the video, yeah. Too.
I dig it. It's got kind of – it's definitely got a new wave kind of vibe to it. Almost reminded me like at the beginning kind of a Devo thing, maybe a little like Joy Division type action.
It's got that bass. Yeah, it's got that.
It doesn't sound like Epitaph to me, so that's kind of good at this point. But yeah, I dug it. I thought it was cool. I mean, it's not necessarily my thing, but I thought it was good.
Yeah, this is a funny band for me because there is a lot of musical elements here that I have sought out I have, you know, really tried to dig into in the past that are evident in the Gardens stuff. And if I had just come across, like, if this was a song that was on, I don't know, some Alive Records comp of, you know, weird garage stuff that I would have been listening to a lot in the early part of the 2000s, I would not have at all questioned my like for it. I would have been like, hey, this is kind of funky and weird and, you know, fuzzy but catchy and all that kind of stuff, right? And like, and I'd be totally down with it. This band has, at least amongst like the punk news crowd, like a weird image problem, and I don't know what it is, because, you know, whenever this band gets mentioned on the site, everyone seems to jump on it. And I'm not sure why.
Well, I'll tell you why. It's because they don't look like orgcore punkers. They don't look like traditional punk rockers. They're both unique looking fellows. Don't you agree?
I think it's because John loves them. People love to break John's balls. Well, that's personal opinion.
But I mean, like I think it's because they look weird or they look different. And so, you know, I like to push the punk news kids out of their comfort zone, and they fight like hell to get back in their comfort zone. But what I want to talk about is the lyrics on this song. The lyrics are roughly, run a mile, I'm going to take my time, I'm going to take it, I'm going to steal from you if I have to, I'm going to straighten you up, I'm going to make you feel, I'm going to make you feel just like they felt. So the Garden songs are often very obtuse, and I'm not sure what they're about. Do you guys have any guess about what this song is about?
I not lyrically analyze this one, John. What's your read?
Well, I know because they did a short post about it because for some reason they were getting grief about it. But the song is actually about sexual assault, and it's from the
perspective. I was going to say, that was my first thought. But.
Yeah. It's from the perspective of the sexual assaulter. And so the way I read this song is it's in the mind of someone. And it doesn't have to be sexual assaulter. It could just be it's a bad guy, you know. And the song is very driving and very energetic, and it makes you feel powerful. And I think they're examining that mindset, you know, through the song and why people are bad in that way. So here's my and I think this song is great. So obviously they're not saying sexual assault is good. They're saying it's bad, but they're examining it from the context of the bad actor. Here's my question, and I don't want to run this concept into the ground, but we talked about Viet Cong 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and they had to change their name because they made people feel bad because their name references bad things. Here's my question. If Viet Cong has to change their name because their name makes people feel bad, isn't that the same as The Garden portraying sexual assault from the perspective of the sexual assaulter?
Well, it's a single song as opposed to their entire name sort of existence. But, you know, a lot of people just can't accept anything that has to do with anything controversial without considering it, deeming it offensive. It's just, you know, small minds might have a problem with this. I personally don't have a problem with it. I just think it's
I don't have a problem with it either. And I think this song is great. And my point is this, and not to run this into the ground, but, you know, within the past 3 or 4 years, there's been a great deal of self-censorship of music and basically people demonizing art that they think is scary or offensive with extreme demonization. Like, you're either with us or you're against us. And I think that this song shows that mindset is extremely dangerous and extremely foolish mindset, because if you use that mindset, then all of a sudden tons of art, tons of perspective, tons of intellectual thinking is completely snapped out just because it might verge on something that is difficult to deal with or difficult to comprehend or requires critical thinking. Adam, I don't know if you want to comment on this or not. You don't have to.
No, I'll let you take this one, John. You've put way more thought into this than I have. I watched the video and I was like, all right, that was weird, but I'm cool. But you've analyzed this shit, so I'm not even going to go there. Well, anyway, you are the master of the Garden. You're the Garden master.
I am the Garden master. I think this band – well, like I said, I'm the first guy to ever interview this band and the first guy to ever do a review. And now they've got 20,000 fans on Facebook. Anyways, I think this band is great. I think you should check them out.
Coincidence? I don't think so.
You should check them out. This band is great. And Keith Morris and Dean Sabatino of – Dead Milkmen like them. So if you don't have to take my word for it.
John, you are humble as ever. So we're going to move on to something else that features a band that people seem to have a bit of a problem with these days. And John, another one that seems to be just sticking in your craw. So
well, I like his band.
Well, no, but I mean, but oh, you've had the grapple with the hate.
I have.
You have. So, Ceremony recently visited the AV Club to take part in their AV Undercover series. This is a series in which at the start of the year, they take a list of songs. They invite bands to come in. Bands cover the songs. They film it. They stick it on the internet. And then they cross that song off. And then the list gets smaller. And if depending on when you go in the year, you may get some weird stuff, some slim pickings. Now, we had talked about the AV Undercover project a bunch earlier in the year because the Screaming Females did a really cool cover of Taylor Swift's Shake It Off on there. And I think we talked about that on the show. But the Ceremony track that was just posted was a cover of the Oasis song Rock and Roll Star. So you can go check that out. Ceremony is, of course, doing everything right now in support of their derided new album, The L-Shaped Man. Is that even a kind thing? Like, is that the right thing to say?
Yeah, I would say derided because Pitchfork smacked him so bad. Rolling Stone smacked him so bad, and that surprised me because the writer is not a SmackDown kind of writer, you know? And then AV Club thought it was okay, and most other places thought it was okay.
Yeah, so a couple of angles to take on this. You know, the Ceremony angle, the Oasis angle. I just wanted to say before we get going that just as a point of trivia, this is not the first time Ceremony's been on the AV Club Undercover series. They were on there back in 2012, and they covered a song by the Violent Femmes. Yeah, they covered what song? Let's find out with the internet.
Yeah.
Well, they covered Kiss Off. Okay, so there you go. So they covered the cover of Violent Femmes. So, John, Ceremony, Oasis. What do you think?
Well, first, Ceremony is a cool band. I like how Ceremony is a hardcore punk band or was a hardcore or whatever you want to say that does daring things outside of the confines of traditional hardcore punk. More and more, I'm troubled by this 90s alt-rock or even 90s mainstream radio – actually, yeah, 90s mainstream radio rock, I guess, re-canonization. Like in the mid-90s, bands like Oasis were considered terrible bands by the punk rock people. Now, just because the majority thinks something sucks doesn't mean it did, you know? But I do feel like a lot of this, like Oasis, I think is a super bland band. You know, the punk rock community loves Third Eye Blind now, even though they were a terribly bland and boring band. And so I guess I do understand why there's been so much, I guess, redefinition of this 90s mainstream radio rock. That's because now people that are 25 and 30 grew up with that kind of music, and 35 grew up with that kind of music. So even though the punk rockers at the time who were 25 or 30 then hated it, the people that were kids then, you know, that heard it in high school, always loved it. And now that they're the main music makers in the focus of the news, then it's cool to like the kind of music again. I just want to go on record and say that I don't like Oasis or Third Eye Blind at all. And I thought Ceremony's cover was amusing, not great. I think they did a serious cover of it, but I don't know. There's just so much more dangerous and interesting music there. I don't know if we need a cover of Oasis. You know, I mean, and I'm not trying to be hard on the band because I love Ceremony, but I mean, they could have covered Frank Zappa. They could have covered Captain. Actually, no, they couldn't have. They had the pick from the wall, didn't they?
No, they had the pick. That's what I was going to jump in with. However, this is going to drive you insane.
They could have covered Slayer.
Did you see the remaining list of songs?
I saw Slayer, and I would have loved to hear.
No. It's gonna drive you nuts.
Any Danzig song. And the guitar player, Anthony Anzalato, I think he's a huge Danzig fan. I interviewed him once. They could have done Danzig.
Shit. All right. I was gonna go crazy. I was looking at the it covers Oasis. Here we go. So I'm looking at the list here. I'm on the page in the AV Club. And it says these are the remaining songs. The remaining songs on the list after Ceremony were, and I'm going to go from the remaining songs on the list, She Bops by Cyndi Lauper.
Meh.
Things Can Only Get Better by Howard Jones.
Meh.
One Thing Leads to Another by The Fix.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The Impression That I Get by the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones.
Mm.
Raining Blood by Slayer.
Mm.
Sabotage by the Beastie Brothers.
Mm.
And this is how it is written, GWAR cover any song.
Ceremony, wow. You could have covered the. What better time to cover GWAR now than after the passing of Dave Brocky? You could have paid tribute to one of the most daring, one of the most bold bands in music, just like you, Ceremony. You could have covered GWAR. You could have covered Salamanizer. You could have covered War Party. But instead, you decide to cover Oasis? Come on! Come on! Come on, Ceremony. You didn't have to do a heavy metal style. You could have done a reggae style. You could have done a folk style. There's so many interesting ways to do a GWAR song, and you pick to do a semi-traditional cover of Oasis. Really, Ceremony? You're cool. You're a great band, but come on, GWAR. I mean, do you think you're better than GWAR? Is that what it is? Like, you think you're too good to do GWAR? Because let me tell you, you're cool, Ceremony, but no one is better than GWAR. People might be as good as GWAR. Melvins are as good as GWAR. Dwarves are as good as GWAR. No one's better than GWAR. GWAR is – it's miraculous that GWAR even exists. And you choose Oasis? Oasis? Oasis?
I you know what? When I saw this, I knew that would drive you absolutely crazy. I mean, like, part of the AV Underclubber thing is that, like, you could get stuck by, you know, covering a song you do not want to cover.
Yeah, but I mean, actually
– they picked the worst one on the list.
So few bands like take a song and just ruin it. They always like it'd be so awesome if a band just got up there and like ruined a song and they just won't do it, you know. Except actually, when GWAR got stuck with Kansas, Wayward Son, Carry On My Wayward Son, and they did an awesome, hilarious version of it. And Odorous Urungus is like, "Carry on, my wayward son. Why don't you get a job and get off the couch?" And it's hilarious. You could have done that, Ceremony. You could have done that.
You're being too kind, John. This is a god-awful cover of a god-awful song. I know you like Ceremony, but it blows.
The song's shitty. The cover's okay. They could have been more daring. I and actually, you know,
They might have been able to be more daring, but they couldn't have been more dull. It's just not for me.
Fair enough. Perhaps we should be consoling Ceremony because, I mean, as much as I hate to keep bringing up that beat down because it's just one guy's opinion. Who cares about him? But It really did ripple through the music community because it was such a vicious personal beatdown. Maybe they're scared to be daring right now because it was such a vicious beatdown.
I think it's worse than that. Don't you think they look at that list and say, "Oh, those are all heavy songs. Let's be ironic and cover something."
I don't think they were being ironic. I think they were trying to bring out the central beauty in that song, but that song really doesn't have central beauty. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, I guess the punk band covering a punk song is maybe too on the nose, but GWAR, you can't go wrong with GWAR, you know? Even Slayer, people would have loved it if you did Slayer, you know? Dude,
Cyndi Lauper would have been way better. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's a swing in, I mean, I love Ceremony, but this one's a swing and a miss. Especially when GWAR, I mean, GWAR, it was there for the taking.
Oh, that the fact that you didn't read that before we actually started recording this just fills me with joy. So I think that's it for this week. Are we going to play another song? John, do you want to play a song or I will? Or what do you want to do?
Well, I think we got a spot for you, Adam, if you want to spin a jam.
Yeah, okay.
Please don't be Oasis, Adam. Please don't play Oasis.
What's the story,
John,
Morning Glory?
I have never willingly in my life listened to an Oasis song. So we're going to play a song by a band from Chicago called Meatwave. They're a band that is on they just had a record that came out called Delusion Moon. A Side One Dummy released the thing. Meatwave is not a band that was at all on my radar for a while. But hey, they're touring with one of my favorite bands now, so I have to kind of, you know, I'll probably have to go see them. So I started doing my research, and it turns out that Meatwave's Delusion Moon is a cool record. This is a song from Delusion Moon. It is called Erased. The band is on tour right now with the Dirty Nail, and they're playing in Buffalo next Wednesday, and I might hop the border to go do that. So if you listen to this show and you're in Buffalo, you know, start cleaning up because I'm coming there. So here we go. This is Erased by Meatwave.
Yeah.
we're back. That was Erased by Meatwave. We're just about to wrap up here. We have any other business to take care of, folks?
Tom, do you have a jam that you wanted to play? You want to kick anything out there?
Oh, that's all right, man. We got the Lippies in there. That's cool.
You sure, man?
Yeah.
All right, man.
Next time, definitely.
Cool. All right. Well, if anyone wants to get in touch with us, it is podcast@punknews.org. That is how you email us. Please write us in and tell us that John's megalomania is something that you cannot handle anymore.
I've been trying to tone down on it, but like, see, this is what annoys me. People are like, John, stop talking about the Melvins. John, stop talking about the Garden. Maybe if your favorite bands were as active as my favorite bands, it wouldn't be such an issue. It's not my fault the Melvins put out new music every month. They're hard workers, and I'm going to commend that.
You should try reverse psychology, John. You should say, boy, this Garden, the Garden, man, these guys are not very good at all. And then all of a sudden, they'd be everybody's favorite band. You know, if you champion somebody, man, people, it doesn't matter.
I did champion the Garden and they signed the Epitaph. That's what I'm saying.
That's true. That's all right. You are a tastemaker, John.
I am.
Home of Ronnie Radke. Good night, everyone.